Welcome to the Profit Cash Growth Podcast. This is the podcast for six and seven figure business owners who are looking to grow a financially successful business. My co-host, Claire Hancock, is a finance director, chartered accountant, and entrepreneur. And every week, I'll be exploring guidance and frameworks designed to help you increase your profits, improve your cash flow, and grow your business. This week on the podcast, it's the Big Fight Live. Do you take your profits from your business or do you reinvest in your business? This week, me and Claire fight it out to see who wins.
So I've just said to Simon that we should start this podcast with a bit more of a chit chat. And he said to me, he has got absolutely nothing to say to me. So
you were literally talking to me about coffee. Why don't they make coffee flavoured cough sweets a minute ago?
I thought that I don't think anybody coffee coughs would be a good brand name for a cough sweet. And I thought with coffee being such a popular drink in the UK, why do they not make cough flavoured cough sweets? And it's quite a catchy name, don't you think?
I just think that coffee's best kept in a coffee rather than a cough sweet.
I don't know.
It's the eucalyptus element that you'd need to sort of umbung ya.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that cough sweets don't really do that much. It's more like the sucking and having moisture that makes a difference.
This is why we don't do small talk. Anyway, today it's the Big Fight Live and I'm particularly looking forward to the fight off. I'm going to really justify why I'm going to take all the profits out of my business today.
And I am going to be arguing for reinvesting those profits in your business instead.
Yeah. And we don't particularly believe in either one, but I have put up a good fight here. And I've got four brilliant reasons why I want to just strip the profits out of my business and spend them and why people should consider that as an avenue.
Yeah, so I could argue the hind legs off a donkey. So I am very much looking forward to this. So yeah, what are we starting with first though, Simon?
It's going to be a good one. Let's see what's been going on in the news first. So this week, it's all about coffee prices, high coffee prices. Now, let me ask you a question, Claire. How much would you pay for a medium latte in Pret?
Oh, now I'm more of a tea drinker than coffee. I don't drink coffee that often, so the caffeine gives me a bit of a headache and I think decaf tastes like crap. So I couldn't actually tell you the last time I bought a coffee and I'm also...
Buying it for me though, aren't you?
So. Yeah, but I'm a bit sort of...
Are you like one of these politicians that couldn't tell you the price of a pint of milk?
Yeah, I just tap my card and I walk away. I'm terrible. And probably as a numbers person, this does shock people. But yeah, I just buy stuff without knowing how much it costs. So I'm imagining about £3.50.
Do you know what? You're 10 pence out, £3.60.
Not bad. So,
but you're saying you're prepared to pay that. That's the price now since it's jumped 30% since 2021. It was £2.75. It's now £3.60, which is the whole article that I've read this week about a 30% jump since 2021. And it's not just Pret, it's across all of them. They've got a little graph, Costa, Starbucks, Pret, Caffeinera. They've all done the same jump. They've all really rocketed in price. And obviously we know that inflation's been high and we know that that's been driven by, you know, increases in wages, and we know that people have been hard to get hold of. But also, don't forget that the national living wages has just gone up, literally just gone up also by another pound an hour. I'd imagine the most people that they employ in these places are on minimum wage or above.
Yeah, I mean, there's the coffee shop industry in the UK is worth about 20 billion a year, and around about a third of that are actually small independent businesses. So increase in prices and increase in wages on small businesses, you know, we don't need to preach to you guys that are listening to this, but that's a massive jump in cost for small businesses. And if they're not aware of that increase in cost and or they're not adjusting their pricing accordingly, then that will have a big impact on the profits and, you know, could even make the difference between whether that business survives or not. So it's quite significant impact.
Do you think there's a bit of an argument to where's the saturation point with coffee shops? Because coffee shops have just been like exploding for 20 years now, haven't they? It was like not really a massive thing. It was all very boutique-y before. Mm-hmm. Now you've got the big chains coming in and, you know, you've got the big names I mentioned, Costa, Pret, Starbucks and Caffeinera, but you've also got people like Greggs and McDonald's who absolutely saturate that coffee market as well in a different way. They're suggesting, I mean, it's still growing at the moment, from 2014 to 2017, that's 5 years ago, the number of coffee shops grew by about 500 a year. That's now slowed to 177 a year. And they're suggesting that the market may be inching closer and closer to sort of saturation. And therefore, will these kind of eye-watering prices for a cup of coffee be sustainable as they hit that saturation point?
Yeah, I absolutely think they do. One of the unique things about the coffee industry is it's actually a really good business model when you think about making your premises work for you, because if you, I don't know, you have like a retail shop, you're a bit limited as to what you can put in there and the hours that people want to come and shop with you. But when you're a coffee shop, you know, you've got probably three different types of customers. You've got the workers and the people that are popping in for coffee and popping in for lunch, the grab and go people. But then you've also got this big boom in people that are wanting to go out to work, but not necessarily go to an office. So, you know, we see lots of these coffee shops now doing, particularly independents in our town, they're doing like a subscription where you pay a monthly subscription. You can go and work in the coffee shop and you get unlimited tea and coffee. Fantastic way of bringing in regular income, like a subscription-based model. You know, Pret's really famously done that too. And then you've got the leisure people, you know, the people that go out at the weekends and the mums with the kids in the morning and the over 50s and all of that kind of thing. So there's so much market and it's very easy for a coffee shop to serve lots of those just by doing different offers and, you know, different branding.
Different times of the day. Yeah, just exactly. Attracts totally different audience. Yeah. You've got the after school mums and you've got the, you know, the during school time elderly and all those different things.
I actually, whilst the business model itself is maybe not one that I'd necessarily go into because I think it's quite hard work, I do think that actually from a numbers perspective, it's quite easy to make the business work if you kind of sweat your asset of your premises and make sure that you've got bums on seats at all the different peak times of the day.
So the gross profit on a cup of coffee is, you know, renowned as being one of the biggest, you know, they talk about things like pizzas, things like, but coffee is like, used to cost like, I don't know, 10p to make a cup of coffee and you charge £3 for it. Are they a profitable business to go into? Do you think so? Or do you think it's just by the time you've eaten all the overheads of the rent, the people to serve it, the heating and all the rest of it, that actually it's not so great? What, would you open a coffee shop?
Actually, I nearly bought a coffee shop when I was 17. I love, whilst I don't like coffee, I do like cake. And I do love the hospitality industry. There's just something quite special about serving people and engaging with people. So from that perspective, I probably would do it more as a passion project than a money-driven thing. But whilst the markup on coffee itself is good, I think that actually it's a little bit like what's happened in pubs and bars. Now they serve, you know, people are not going in for a gin and tonic or a JD and Coke anymore. They're going in for fancy cocktails and those cocktails take more time to make and they've got more ingredients in them. And that's exactly what we're seeing in coffee shops do. So if you can get your bread and butter of espressos and flat whites, then you'll be fine. But where you're doing fancy frappuccinos and hot chocolates with sprinkles and all of these other things that have got lots of elements to them, then actually, once you've factored in your labour costs, you're probably not making more than 70, 75%, which you would expect to be making on food and drink anyway.
Well, you know, might have gone up a third, but we're still drinking it, aren't we?
If the
number of shops are still growing, even by 177 every year, it means the market's still growing and
100 million cups a day is what the UK drinks in coffee. Wow. So, yeah.
Is that out of home?
No, in total, including your home brew instant coffee and your...
I mean, you can get such great stuff at home now. You get the machines, you get everything to do really high quality stuff at home, but clearly people still want to drink it out. And you know what? Are we that expensive? Because actually, compared to the rest of Europe, we're still cheaper. A couple of dates here. You've got £4.62 in Berlin, £4.79 in the Netherlands, £5.30 in Paris.
Yeah, but these are big changes. I mean, we've been on holiday quite a few times to Italy in particular, and they're obviously coffee lovers there, and you're paying like literally like €1 for a coffee in these other countries. So well,
according to this article,
they're probably talking about the big tourist commercial cities where you're going into a Starbucks or something like that, you know, like being in central London. So I don't think you're necessarily comparing eggs and eggs there. So
absolutely. Should we move on?
Absolutely.
So this week's big deep dive is the big fight live. Is it, should you take your profits out of your business or should you reinvest them into your business? Or is there perhaps a happy medium between the two? We've decided to take sides on this one, irrespective of our personal opinions. I'm taking take the profits, and Claire, you're taking reinvest in the business, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
So I have got four arguments for why I would take the profits. So I'll go first. So number one is, I think one of the reasons you need to take your profits is you need to feel rewarded, because it's incredibly hard work growing, starting and being consistent with the business. And you know as well as anybody else that consistency is the number one thing that makes or breaks a business. And when things are down and you're feeling a little bit beaten up, you know, just being able to take that money out and do something nice with it just helps you to continue to move forward. And I think psychologically, from a mindset perspective, I think it actually grow your business in the early stages faster than reinvesting it.
Well, I do have a little bit of sympathy for that. You know, I have been full on profit cash growth for about 18 months now. And yeah, it's tough. I mean, the business has been going longer than that, but not the hours that I'm doing now and not the intensity. And when I was doing it as sort of a part-time sort of side hustle style role, then yeah, I didn't feel like I wanted rewarding. But what I would say is, for the vast majority of people, if you are doing this for short-term income, go and get a job. Like, I cannot stress enough how you should not run a business for income. You know, over the, I'd say the first 5 years of your business, you absolutely, hands down, would earn more money if you went and got a job. So just forget it. If that's why you're in it, forget it, Simon. Go and get a job instead.
So is that your argument for reinvesting?
That is my
argument. Your first argument?
That is my argument. My first argument is that if you're in it for short-term money, go and get a job. You will earn more money. So therefore, you need to be doing this for long-term gains. You need to be building a business because it's a long-term asset, or it's significantly changing your life or something like that. It shouldn't be about paying a salary, because certainly in the first 5 years or so, you'd be lucky. You've got to do a lot of things right.
Okay. All right, my second argument for why I want to take the profits is to do something different with them, to invest them outside of my existing trading business, perhaps to diversify against changes or downturns in my current business. So maybe I want to take them out to invest them in something a bit more stable or a bit slower, like property or the stock market or something like that.
Yeah, now this is interesting, because for those of you that know me and Simon well, we have done that. We've both run our businesses and we have invested millions of pounds into property, and we've got quite a sizable portfolio now. So this is a bit of a curveball, and Simon has caught me out a little bit here, and I'm going to struggle to argue with this. However, I would say that it's sort of linked to a little bit what I've just said now. You shouldn't get into business for short-term gains. You shouldn't be getting into property for short-term gains either. So, you know, you could probably reinvest. If you had 100k, for example, but let's talk about 50k, because probably you're not going to be able to buy a decent letting property for less than 50k. So if you've got 50k, by the time you've reinvested that in your business, you know, you should be able to easily double your money in 1 or 2 years in your business. But you're gonna take 20 years to double that in letting. So why not just put that back into your business and turn it into more money quicker?
It's a fair argument.
That is a fair argument. Thanks, Simon. I think I won that one. So one of the other reasons why I think it's really important to keep money in your business is because I've worked with a lot of businesses that have been quite old, small businesses, actually, that have been family generational businesses in particular. I see this in a lot. And where you see businesses that have historically had low investment in technology, equipment and things like that, they tend to have far higher labour costs over the lifetime of that business. And the reason for that is because new equipment technology tends to bring a high level of productivity with it, which therefore brings down labour costs. So actually, you might be able to get that money out of your business on a short term. But if you think in about 10, 15 years time, if you were heavily investing in technology and equipment, you would be reaping the rewards in the future. So actually, your short term gain really does harm your business. And in the long run, businesses with low investment have higher labour costs.
That's fair. That's a fair argument as well, I think.
Especially these
days. How long would I have to wait on average? You know, when do I get paid? You know, when do I get the shiny goods if I take that approach?
Do you mean from reinvestment?
Yeah.
It does depend on what you reinvest in and the price of it. You know, ideally, I would be saying for a business that they're not going to be wanting to make investment in systems, technology, equipment if the payback's less, sort of more than 3 to 5 years. So most businesses should be able to get their money back and then start making profit within about 3 to 5 years maximum. And if it's any longer than that, then it actually becomes more and more risky.
Is it different between whether you've had a business for years and you're looking to, you know, step change that business versus you're a startup business? So I know as a startup business that I would say it's going to take 10 years before I absolutely get to where, you know, I really want to get to with that. 10 years is a long time to say, I'm not really taking the money that I want. I'm not getting what I want from that. And I think that's typical of startups. They don't really start to really, really properly go until they hit about 10 years, do they?
Well, I think it's interesting what you're saying there, Simon, because what I've just picked up on is you've said that you're not taking the money that you really want to take. And one of the rules that I always make sure that every client that I'm working with is very clear is what the market rate for their job is. So in my business, I'm the managing director, but if I was to exit my business still needs a me in it to run. So how much would I have to pay for that person to be in my business? And I think it's incredibly important that every business owner knows what that number is, because if you're not covering your salary, then you don't have a viable business model. So I think we're perhaps getting into the nuances of exactly what we're talking about here. But I think it's really important that you're paid a fair wage for the job you do in your business. And when I'm talking about reinvesting the profits, I'm talking about those profits over and above your fair wage. Yeah. So if your fair wage is 50K, should you then take a 50K bonus as well? I think no. You think yes.
That moves me quite nicely onto one of, it was my fourth point. I'm going to move it to my third point because I think it makes this point very, very well, because you were talking about my time. And I'm saying I want to take the profits because I want to free up more of my time to buy back my time to be able to spend in that business. So I'm talking about, I want to use the money to make sure that I've, my house has been cleaned, my car has been washed, my laundry's been done, my gardening's been done. I don't want to lift a finger outside of the business. I want every minute I spend to be a time investment in that business, because that's more important. And that is an argument for taking the profits.
Well, Simon, as I've just said, you need to be, as a managing director or a business owner, you need to be on a salary, or your business needs to be able to afford to pay you a salary that is commensurate for the role you do. So if you have that approach that every minute that you put into your business is high value, growth, strategic thinking, you're going to be on 100K. So that more than affords your cleaner and your Range Rover and all of the things that you want. So there is an argument that actually, if your business can't afford to pay you that 100K salary that you want to fund the lifestyle, it's probably because you're not very good at your job. What do you say to that, Simon? Oh, he's actually speechless.
I have no answers for that, really.
I've got another one.
That was a low blow, actually.
It was a low blow. But the reality is, you know, like, small business owners can't live in a bubble away from the rest of the employment world. And I think it's really...
How many small business owners do you think can easily take six figures out of their business as a salary every year? I bet it's less than 1%.
As a proportion of the total businesses, yes. But absolutely. I would say as a proportion of my client base and our listeners, I'd say it's high.
We all not bother?
No. I think if you... As a business owner, if you, it's like the mistake that a lot of business owners make that never get to that six-figure salary is because they don't approach their business like a job. You know, if you go into a job, and most of us start in the corporate world near the bottom, you go in and you keep upskilling yourself and you learn new skills and you take on new responsibilities and you get paid more and you climb the career ladder. And a lot of people start their own business and they plateau.
Only 7,500 businesses in the UK employ what I'd call a significant or reasonable amount of people. And of those 7,500, most of them are owned by multiple businesses. So probably are owned by only about 4,500 individual companies. You know, that journey to get there, I don't think that many people are going to find it that easy to take that amount of money that you're talking about. But, you know.
Yeah, but I think there is a significant difference between businesses that what you would say have got a number of employees and profitable businesses, because there's probably a sweet spot for small businesses where they've got maybe sort of 3 to 10 employees and they tend to be quite profitable. And then when they go over that, they start getting these layers of middle management. And when you need middle management, that's when, you know, you start sapping a lot of time and your productivity goes down and therefore your cost base goes up. So if you're going to go over that sort of crunch point, you've got to go over that aiming to be big.
But if I know, you know, let's say for argument's sake that the business could never afford me because, you know, even the top person in my business, you know, would be a 50, 60 grand person. Let's say that I think I'm a £250,000 person. So the business could never afford me anyway. Then I take that £100,000 and I buy back all my time. Every minute that I then put in back into the business is a £250,000 a year person, quality of person that's inputting into that business. Is that not a better argument for taking the profits? Am I not in some ways reinvesting in the business anyway? I'm hoping you win here, aren't I, by switching the occupant?
If you're a 250K a year employee, then why are you working? You wouldn't go and get a job as a 100K a year employee. So why are you doing it in your own business?
But not everybody wants to work for a big employer as an employee. There are, you know, other people have different, you know, there are different benefits to running your own business around control. And certain individuals
run a different
like
business
me,
model.
Are, you know, run have a different certain business types type. Of control. But starting again after you've put 7-8 years into it is, you know, is crazy challenging. You know how hard it is to get to that first bit. Why would you start again just because all the business model isn't quite the sweetest one that I could have gone down? But starting again is very, very challenging. As
you don't have to start again. You just have to change fundamentally what your business model is and how you make money and how you utilize your skill set.
Because easier said than done, isn't it?
It is easier said than done, but it's absolutely possible. And I don't know. We've discussed this. We've actually discussed this many times, Simon, about things that could be done with your business. But you're at a point where, you know, we're at a point in our lives where we don't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a choice, isn't it? Anyway, before we fall out over that one, right, let me move on. Have you got another argument for your side? I think I'm winning.
A little bit similar to what we've been saying now, actually. I think that I see a lot of business owners that are very comfortable in life and they're earning a good amount of money and they're quite happy with their income and they stop pushing.
That's you, babe.
Well, yeah, that is.
You just describe yourself. That I know why you put that on there.
It's been me, life, but it's not me at the moment. I'm definitely pushing for growth in my business. But amazing. Yeah, I've been there. You know, I earn good money and I didn't need to do anything else. So I wasn't really focused on growing my business. And that hasn't... And, you know, if you're not careful with that, you can get caught out. Things change in the industry and you're not up to speed with them. And all of a sudden, your business can actually start declining because of that if you're not careful. So I think that actually, if you're too comfortable in terms of your salary and you've got no aspirations and you're just creaming loads of money off your business, then actually that really does affect your morale because you start to resent that work is getting in the way of your tremendous life.
Do you know, I read something that was an interesting take on this, that you cannot actually just be flat in your business. Because actually, if you're flat in your business, you're actually going backwards because you forget that every year GDP itself should grow. You know, I know in the UK, there's this big thing about stagnant economy. Let's say you're in America. The American economy's grown like 3-4% every year. You know, if over a 10-year period, it's 20% up. You know, if your business had been flat during that time, your business is down 20% after 10 years.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the numbers that I always make sure my clients are aware of is inflation adjusted growth, especially over the last 2 or 3 years. You know, I'm working with some clients and they're very happy that they've seen sort of 25-30% growth. But when you take out inflation, you know, they've seen single digit growth and it's actually not that
significant. And they're deluding themselves that they're doing okay and it's a problem.
And it's also really important when you're thinking about your business growing and the infrastructure in your business, so the team and the systems and the processes that need to support that. Because if your growth is only coming from inflation, then you don't have any more work to do. You're still serving the same amount of customers, still selling the same amount of products. So your team doesn't need to grow and your cost base should also only be going up by inflation. You get really carried away and you think you've got 25% growth. You're like, oh my goodness, we need more team members to cope with all the extra work we're doing. And you don't.
What was that accent? Oh my goodness.
I don't know.
Very strange accent on it. So my final one, I'm going to try and really, really, really just put a knockout punch out here. I think it is the view of, you know, life is short and I want to take money out of my business because I want to treat my friends, my family, my children at a time in their life when they would get the most value from it. I don't want to wait till I die and they inherit it when they don't really need it, you know. Or maybe the wife, you know, maybe treat the wife, maybe improve your personal life and have a better balance across the board. This is my argument for taking profits to improve your broader life as well and actually share some of the rewards.
Well, I'm all ears now. I mean, if Simon tells me exactly how he's going to treat me, then he may be winning this argument. So what ideas have you got, Simon? How are you going to treat me with all your earnings that you're going to start taking out of your business?
Well, you don't need any more holidays, that's for sure. So yeah, that's my argument with that one. I read a great book once called Die With Zero, Bill Perkins, absolutely fantastic. And it's just a totally different look on life. And it's about, you know, going through the accumulation phase very aggressively, but then going through what they call a decumulation phase. So there's a sweet spot where you reach the crest of the mountain and then you try and actually spend all of the money you've got to effectively die with zero, which is fantastic.
We are approaching the decumulation phase. We're not there yet. We've still got to accumulate a little bit more.
I think you entered it about 12 months ago.
Look, being somebody who has been brought up with parents that have their own businesses, and I do understand that a certain extent. You know, to be honest, me and my family have never had any benefits of my family's businesses doing well and things like that. So actually, from that perspective, I'd say it probably drove me more, because I knew as an individual that there would be no handouts, there would be no treats. You know, everything that I had and I got was because I earned it. So actually, you know, obviously you don't want your family members destitute, so you want to be able to help them if they really need it. But otherwise, I don't actually think that you should be giving handouts to family members.
Well, I don't know. I think there's a saying in this country, happy wife, happy life. And it seems to be said to me over and over again. So you never know.
Well, look, luckily, Simon's our punching distance. So he's not got a happy wife right now, that's for sure, making that comment.
Look, that's me done for take the profits. What else have you got? How are you going to win this, Claire? Because you're behind now. I mean,
well, look,
this
my
is not
final
looking
one
good for reinvest.
Is
come on, why?
That if you have money in your business, it makes you more agile. It makes you able to take advantage of opportunities that might land on your doorstep. And actually, I tend to find that with a lot of small businesses, growth and opportunity tends to be like buses. You can sit around thinking, how on earth am I going to grow my business? How on earth? How on earth? And then all of a sudden, you get opportunities that seem to all come at one time and you're having to pick between which one you can afford. So being able to be agile, having a bit of spare cash in the bank, not a bad thing. And it also means that you don't need to rely on external financing, which costs quite a lot of money, particularly at the moment with interest rates.
Do you know what? I'm super annoyed.
Did you like that one at the end?
I'm so super annoyed. You saved that till the end deliberately, because I literally couldn't agree more with that. And the biggest reason is that everything I've said just becomes pointless if the business can't survive a downturn.
Well, it's interesting that you say that.
It's been
starved
of cash.
Because as an estate agent, you know, we
had it in the last 12 months. It's been a tough 12 months. You know, you lose a third of your turnover, and if you're making 20% profit, that's all your profit gone.
Yeah, and there's absolutely nothing that, you know, so for those of you that might be new to the show, Simon's business is an estate agency. And when we went through COVID and the bubble that happened after that, you know, it was happy days and things were going great, but absolutely the market died over the last 12, 18
because of
months.
Liz Truss.
And it was Liz Truss, ever since Liz Truss, so that was back in 2022. And there was absolutely nothing that we could do about it from a business perspective.
The entire market shrunk. Shrunk 32%. You can't fight for a bigger market.
So we did just have to ride the storm out, and we had to make a choice between
happy wife or business.
we did have to make choices, you know. It was getting to the point where we were...
Beans on toast time.
If we didn't have options and we didn't have a safety net and we weren't able to say we don't need to take that money out of the business, then we might have had to consider letting people go.
Yeah, and it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you don't want to let great people go when you know that it's going to swing back round.
Yeah.
And they're very hard to find good people. You know, I always say, you know, you kiss a lot of frogs before you meet your prince, and you do with staff. And
you've got some... great people. Bloody tremendous people in your team. And if we had had to let one of them go, it would have set you back probably 12, 18 months,
absolutely.
I think. So
absolutely.
That agility and that ability to
priceless.
Weather a storm is priceless. And that is the reason
why you should reinvest
overall.
In your business.
Yeah, well, I think you should reinvest in your business. But as much as
you
I
really
think
just
I
want
ended
the holiday,
on a really
don't
strong
you?
Argument,
you do, anyway.
I think you've got to have a happy balance. I really do. I think that...
Of course, everything's about balance. And that's why we've had this jovial argument about it. I think there's an argument for both sides. There's some great, great, great points put across, I think, today.
I think if you live on a shoestring, you get resentful as well. I think it's really important to mention that, you know, like you say, running a small business is bloody hard.
Really hard. Why would you do it if you can't
and
enjoy it?
You don't want to be in the situation where you're making short-term decisions. I think that's the most detrimental thing a business can ever do is... to be driven by making short-term decisions about driving profit. You've got to be making medium to long-term decisions that drive profit. And that's why you shouldn't be only investing or only taking the profits. You've got to find a happy medium. And in fact, I have a YouTube video about this actually, about how much money you should take out of your business versus leaving
in
it. Yeah.
Should we link it in the comments below?
I'll try to. Yeah. Roughly, I recommend a minimum of 20% of your profits reinvested every year.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. It was a bit of a different format to usual, but I certainly enjoyed trying to beat Claire at that particular game. So anyway, if you want us to do some more fight-offs, do comment or drop us a note, claire@profitcashgrowth.com. Let us know what you'd like us to fight about. We're always up for a little fight, aren't we?
Well,
anything business.
Sound like
apart from when I'm spending
marriage.
My profits on you. Anyway, shall we move on to Profit Cash Growth Extra?
So a lot of the time, business owners are not claiming the mileage that they should because they find it a headache trying to keep on top of it. And I have been using for a number of years now a little app that I find very helpful called Mile IQ, but there are loads and loads of apps available out there that do similar things. So just Google mileage app. There's loads of free ones out there and some that cost a couple of pounds a month. But essentially what these do is every time you get in your car, it automatically knows that you are driving and it logs the start and end date and the miles that you've done. And then you just need to go into the app every time you've done a journey and say whether it's personal or business. And then you can download this all into a spreadsheet every week, every month, every year, whatever it is that you want to do, so that you've got your mileage claims for your business. The best bit is that some of the good ones like MileIQ, which is a Microsoft product, is fully compatible with HMRC. So it means that if you ever have a tax inspection, you've got everything that you need from a legal perspective.
This sounds like magic.
It is magic. I know.
Is it that I trialed one of these. I'm sure, I don't know.
Yeah, you used to write on a spreadsheet.
Maybe 10, 12 years ago in the previous year, I tried it and it was like 90%, but the 10% that was not good enough was annoying me. Have they got better over time?
What was the 10% not good enough?
I don't know. It was just missing certain bits of the journey or certain journeys or things like that. As I remember, I don't know.
Well, yeah,
I'm sure the tech's got loads better in like 10, 11 years.
The tech has evolved a lot. But I mean, when I worked in the corporate world and we introduced this in the corporate world, we had, 200 plus people, drivers, salespeople on the road using this all the time. So
amazing.
From that perspective, the tech's a lot better. And like I say, there's loads of free things. Simon refuses to
Why did you design me a new mileage sheet to do with pen and paper then the other day?
Simon still keeps a piece of paper in his car that he jots.
I'm
going to
try MileIQ now you've told me this.
Yeah.
It sounds epic.
So yeah, just... Anyway, it's a really great way of keeping on top of your mileage, making sure that you're claiming all the tax-free deductions that you're entitled to from your business. And just Google mileage apps, and there's so many out there. So just find one that works for you.
Awesome. Thanks very much. We're going to ask a little favour this week. We obviously do this podcast totally for free because we just love talking to each other and we love sharing all of our knowledge with you. But podcasts can only grow through recommendation and through word of mouth and through reviews. So can we ask you, if you do enjoy listening to this, can you give us a bit of feedback? Let us know what it is you particularly like, any ideas for changes around the format, or if you just love as it is, just say, I love it as it is. And please just give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to the podcast. And as always, please follow Claire on the YouTube channel Profit Cash Growth and the Facebook, Instagram and all the other socials. And if you'd like to chat with us about anything at all, just drop us a note and we'll see you again next week.